Do you ever feel like the echoes of past traumas silence the language of love within you? Ever feel like those tough times make it hard to show or receive love now? What if there was a way to gently reawaken your ability to communicate affection, to be heard and to reconnect, not just with others, but with the deepest parts of yourself? Welcome back, amazing listeners, to another episode of Connection Over Perfection, where the beauty of life unfolds in the raw, real moments we share. I'm your host, Amber McCray, here to infuse your day with a dose of heartfelt warmth and wisdom. In the dance of life, we often stumble upon a melody that resonates with our deepest desires, the desire to love and to be loved in return. Today's guest, Paul Zolman, understands that dance intimately. He hasn't just moved to the rhythm, he's created a whole new dance that we can all join in on. Paul has taken the principles of the five love languages and crafted a game, a playful and enlightening way to practice these languages in our daily lives. This isn't about the love languages as we have known them. This is about experiencing them in action, making them tangible and accessible to everyone. From the young at heart to the wisdom filled, it's about turning theory into practice and turning love into a verb that we can live out with intention and joy. So as we sit down today with Paul, we're not just talking about concepts. We're talking about life-changing interactions. We're talking about seeing the good in one another, about changing the way we express our love, and most importantly, about making sure no one feels unseen or unheard. So let's dive into a conversation and welcome a man who's giving a new lens through which we can view our relationships, Paul Zolman. It's an honor to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you, Amber. That was a beautiful introduction. And I appreciate it. That's all your words. And I appreciate that. That was fun.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts.
What a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Of course. So, Paul, could you just share a little bit with us, you know, about your journey? What's kind of led you to the discovery and creation of your role of love and the cube?
Thank you, Amber. The journey is really a long journey. I think it's actually more of a generational journey that happened before I was ever born. Something that was passed down for generations was passed down to me, and it was distasteful. It's more of the critical look at people, what their weaknesses are, what their faults are, and focusing on that all the time. Growing up, I was one of the best critics of all. I thought I'd be a great movie critic. In fact, I thought, you know, why do they even call that a job, a movie critic? Just because you're trying to pick apart something. They should say a movie, something positive. What could be a positive word for that? I mean, they could be called a movie recommender or something. Ooh, you know, just make it different. Anyway, Amber, I grew up in this angry culture. And part of that is criticism. Part of it's the put downs of other people, elevating yourself, thinking that you're elevating yourself. It really doesn't work that way, but you're just putting down people so that you feel better about yourself. The people are talking over one another and so that nobody is really heard. There are no boundaries. That's kind of the culture of an angry culture that I grew up in. I didn't want that for my family. And as any 17-year-old makes the declaration, I'm not going to be like my parents. And they always make that declaration. So I wasn't any different in that way. So I thought I was fairly normal, but I had this issue of that generational anger that was passed down, looking for what's wrong with people and not what's right with them. And I wanted to overcome that. I actually moved away from a circumstance, thinking it was the circumstances that caused all that. And, you know, it just follows you. Whatever you learn growing up, the level that you're educated follows you wherever you go. So I moved in with my brother, 600 miles away from where I grew up. And that brother, I was the number 10 of 11 children, still am. And wow. So big families. My grandfather had 19 children. My father only had 11. I only had 8. And my children, Amber, are only having 3. I don't get it. Why don't they have more grandchildren? That's why we have children, is for the grandchildren. I don't
know. Right. I have one, so I understand.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want more grandchildren. So anyway, I moved away. He had two little children, my brother did. And so playing with those children was really a novelty for me. I didn't have that growing up. I had a little sister, but, you know, I mean, she was just a year younger. It's not like she was a baby and I could, you know, have fun playing with the babies or playing with young children. It wasn't like that at all. So I really enjoyed that experience. And then I saw this anger issue that my brother had, same as my father, that he'd be annoyed, stacking these annoyances on top of one another until he had a flash of anger. Mm-hmm. After that flash of anger, and it just is offensive to everybody around, you know, after that flash of anger, he'd come back down and then start stacking again. I thought, well, that my dad did that. What happened was that my mother and father dated every single Friday night. And I love that about my father. I can't even keep up that pace myself. I don't know. I absolutely don't know how he did it, but I just really admire that trait that my father had. He never missed, but mm-hmm. he wasn't very creative about it. He took my mother to the Maverick Bar every single Friday. And I imagine over alcohol, I was never there, but I can imagine that over alcohol, they're talking about the children and how the week went. My father was a truck driver. He was gone all week. So this was their time to get back together, kind of just have that reconnaissance moment that they just review what the week was like for each one of them. I can imagine my mother starting at the oldest, and then my father's getting annoyed. He's getting annoyed. And by the time he's to number 10, I'm the target. That, and you can see that he had great value for women too, taking my mother out every single Friday night. I'm sandwiched between two girls, the only two girls, all the rest are boys. So one older sister and a younger sister. And so if I even look cross-eyed at those girls, I was in trouble. So I was in trouble a lot because I just practiced looking cross-eyed at people. I mean, it was awful. Anyway, I felt like I was a target and I'd either get a severe spanking or beating, or sometimes it was nice. Sometimes I must have been a good boy that week or something like that. But most of the time it was not nice. A lot of physical abuse. There was sexual abuse within the family. It was just that kind of family. And I just didn't like that atmosphere. Did not want to pass that on to my own children. But then when I started having children, I started realizing I've got that same thing. I'm stacking these annoyances, focusing on what's wrong with those people instead of what's right. I realized that about 15 years ago, when I started dating again, our first marriage ended in divorce, probably because of the anger and some other things that were going on. But as I started dating again, found someone I was interested. As number 10 of 11, you have to have big brother approval. So I had to have my big brother approval. So I took this woman to my brother's house. First thing that happened is that when we go in, my sister-in-law pulls her aside and says point blank, the only emotion that the Zolman family learned growing up was anger. At first I denied it, said, and it made me mad. And I thought, I just verified exactly what she said. And from that point, I had realized I had a choice. I could either become more angry, or I could listen to what she said and really strive to become more loving. I could change that generational thing that had been passed on for generations, improve myself, and become maybe more literate in love. I knew how to be angry to the T. I just had that down. I didn't want that. I didn't want that in my life. And other people around me weren't around me very long if that came out and that happened. So it would be very short-term relationships. And I didn't want that. I wanted some long-term relationships, something that would be not so offensive. You know, I felt like that guy that's in the swimming pool has an accident. Now everybody's scattered and everybody's saying, wasn't me. The water's turning blue right around you. It's you. And I did not want to be that person anymore. So that's more or less the journey, how I really had that paradigm shift, wanting to change that. I looked to books for that education that I needed. I looked to the color code and then finally settled on the 5 love languages. I really liked the love languages just because Dr. Gary Chapman was a Baptist pastor, and he said that these would reconcile to the life of Jesus Christ. Of course, I did my own fact check, and actually these love languages do reconcile to the life of Jesus Christ. I'm Christian, wanted to focus on that. I felt like if I focused on those principles, I would become a better person. So that's what I wanted to do.
Wow, Paul, thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing all of that with us, first of all. And second, something really stood out to me, and I was taking a note, is that the ability to take what your sister-in-law said and take it to heart and have that self-reflection and that humility to say, does this apply to me? And is this an area that I need to work on? I think that emotional intelligence to be able to do that is huge. And so major kudos, because that can be hurtful and it can definitely sting. And like you said, you could take that and be like, well, you know, stay mad.
Mm-hmm.
But you took that and you turned it around, and in the long run created something that is helping so many people, but really has helped you. And that's where the change starts. And so just again, major kudos for that. That's huge.
Thank you so much, Amber. And it really is something that being Christian, I've read the Bible, and in the Last Supper, Jesus says this statement, one of you is going to betray me. And it's all of the 12 disciples are say just four words, Lord, is it I? And mm-hmm. and I think that's something that just to your point, what people can ask in their own lives, is it me? Is it me? Am I that block in the relationship? Is it me that's making this relationship not as good as it could be? And I think that if we have that humble attitude, as you had mentioned, that we're really going to be on the path that's going to help us have better relationships. It's going to help us just get closer to those individuals we really want to be close to.
Yeah, that's huge. To kind of piggyback on that, I love that. This is something that I'm talking to a few other people about, is also this duality of truths, right? Both people can have their truths, but what is the role that we're playing in our part? And I think that that's so important, especially, you know, when we've been hurt by people that we love, what is our part that we played? And I know that this kind of gets into boundaries, but I think it's a great topic that you touched on. So I just kind of want to stay here for just mm-hmm. a hot minute, is that, you know, there's a difference between being humble and allowing people to take advantage of, right? So we just want to make the clarification here that in situations, in connections, in relationships, taking the look at yourself, what is my role in, say, the negative cycle that's happening right now? And focus on that. And when we do that, that removes that kind of attachment and negative, like you said, mm-hmm. towards the other person. Now, that does not mean that they're not responsible for their actions and their role in it. We don't have to take that place and that role to show them that. We're just focusing on our role and what we can do in our cycle.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. It doesn't matter what other people do. It's what we decide we're going to do. It really does matter what other people do. We hope that they would be more loving. We hope that right. they would send out love and do their part. There are boundaries, as you had mentioned, and that's something that I didn't learn growing up. I thought, and the critical part of it is, I thought I could make them make a better choice. I thought I had the ability to manage their life. And I guess that movie critics actually do manage our life. If they say it's a bad movie, you're not going to that movie. Why would you? And so I thought I had that ability from my childhood and the permission to manage other people's life. That's a boundary I didn't learn. And it's not my choice. I'm not living their life. I'm not making their choices for life. Thank goodness, when I realized that I'm not in charge of them, it was such a relief just to let go. Absolutely, right. a huge relief to let go. A huge relief to say, well, what am I in charge of? I can't bid love to come my way. Even in Dr. Chapman's book, you mentioned that there's a huge difference, and there really is a big difference from what I'm showing here versus Dr. Chapman's book. His book was mostly about romantic love, for the five love languages. Mine's not. This is about love to everyone. I was single when I created the tool that I have, Amber, and I said, well, Dr. Chapman, who in the heck am I supposed to love? I don't have anybody here, no mm-hmm. significant other. And I thought, well, I'll just love everyone. And it worked for me. What I was looking for, Amber, is a behavioral change. instead of focusing what's wrong with people, I wanted to focus on what's right with that person. What can I love about that person? And it's a whole paradigm shift. What's wrong with people is maybe 10 or 20% of their personality. I was missing 80 to 90% of that person, the good that that person has. When I started focusing on that 80 or 90% of what's right about that person, I never got annoyed. I was in that frame of mind to watch for what's right, that I was never looking backwards, the opposite direction, 180 degrees backwards, was not looking that direction anymore, wasn't focusing on what was annoying me before. I never became annoyed. And now I just stack kindness on top of kindness, on top of kindness, on top of kindness, until I get to these higher laws of love that evaded me for a long time. The higher laws of love, like charity or compassion or mercy or forgiveness or trust. Trust is so huge. All those are higher laws of love. These are the baby steps. The five love languages become the stair steps, though, that will get you to those higher laws of love. If you want a fuller, richer life of love, you need to get to this literacy level of knowing all five love languages.
I absolutely love that. And I love what you're speaking to, is that this is, I feel like, a pandemic, is this way of thinking. And there are not very many people that I meet that see the good in people first. Mm-hmm. When you said that in our planning call, I was like, I love that, because that's my natural state, is to seeing the good in people. And, you know, often people are like, you know, you trust too much and, you know, you're going to get burned. And I'm like, you know, I would rather see the good, and then the bad's going to be there. Don't worry. I'm going to see that if I need to. Right. But like you said, this choice, I'm reading another book and he's going to be on my podcast also, but he says this, and I love this. He says, you can have 68 degrees hot or 68 degrees cold. 68 degrees is still 68 degrees, but it depends on what's happening outside of you, right? Like if it's hot outside, are you going to feel like 68 is cold? And so it's really accepting, okay, this is how life is. And I have a choice. Am I going to see that it's 68 degrees hot or 68 degrees cold? Am I going to see the negative in this person, or I'm going to choose to see the positive? Mm-hmm. And this life is absolutely beautiful, but it can definitely turn very negative if you only look at the negative. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that that's a pandemic. And so I absolutely love what you're doing here. And I think that this is so amazing. I just want to scream it from the mountaintops, because when you make it fun, it will get done, right? Especially teaching it to our kids. And that kind of leads me into my next question is, you know, why do you believe it's important for individuals, and including kids, to learn the love languages through a game format? Like, what is the difference? For me, I feel like I know. Like I said, when it's fun, it will get done. But I wanted to hear from you.
I'm just writing. I'm quoting you. When you make it fun, it will get done. I love that.
I learned that from Fly Lady when I was going through a really tough time. I read all of her stuff, and she really helped me with some perfectionism. But she's like, when it's fun, it will get done. And I was like, that is yes. Especially with kids.
I like that a lot. So Amber, just to continue with the story a little bit, I read the book, The Five Love Languages, 4 or 5 times. I didn't get it. You mean, Dr. Chapman, if I guess what Amber's love language is and I cater to Amber, we're going to be buddies? You know what, Amber? I'm a bad guesser, and it wasn't working for me up until that time, and it just still wasn't working for me. So the second thing Dr. Chapman has said, well, if you take this survey, then you find out what your love language is. Well, Amber, Dr. Chapman, what the heck am I supposed to do with that? Advertise? Hello, Amber, I'm gifts. What do you have for me today? You know, Amber, I even thought of making it just a little badge that says, hello, my love language is gifts, and here is my QR code for my Venmo. Send it on over. You don't even have to talk to me. Just love me in that way. How ridiculous is that? And so both of those things weren't working. It was really awkward for me. And so I contacted Dr. Chapman. I remembered kind of a throwback to my childhood. Remember that even as dysfunctional as our family was growing up, I remember playing games. And these games that when we got together and played games, there was still smack talk. There were still all the put downs and there were aggressive competition. But it just made us fighters. It made us want to even win even more. And I thought, well, what if I made it a game? And it's a game that everybody would win in this regard. So I contacted Dr. Chapman. I said, Dr. Chapman, are you licensing those little icons that you have, the little pictures that you have for each one of the icons for the love languages? After a couple of weeks, his attorney wrote back and said, no, we're not doing that. So I had an attorney, a copyright attorney, intellectual property attorney in my neighborhood that was a friend. I took the idea to him and he said this, theory like the love language theory is not copyrightable. Application is. So they weren't doing it as a game. So he said I could make my own icons, which I did. And then I put it onto a dice. This is the dice right here.
I'm so excited. Mine's in the mail and it will be here. I think you said Saturday. So
Saturday,
I'm really excited.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a lot of fun with us. So creating this dice that has made just icons, there are no words on it. Pictures burn into your mind. I went to Japan for a couple of years to learn the Japanese language. And to learn the language, you have to almost take a picture with your mind of what the character looks like and then how the character sounds like. And it's a picture, and it's really kind of a interesting way that they write the kanji, and they have their own hiragana and katakana in Japan. But that's how I had to learn Japanese, was by these memory hooks. This is what this dice is all about, the little memory hooks. The first one I held up was two hands touching one another. That would represent the love language of touch. This one is a hand holding an hourglass. You'll notice that every one of them has a hand holding something. I'll talk about that in a minute. The hourglass about time. My wife loves to spend time. She just loves, that's one of her love languages. And when we talk about love languages, we're talking about what we like to receive. Confusing as it was for me, when reading Dr. Chapman's book, I said, now what direction is it? Am I giving it away or am I receiving it? And it just was back and forth. And I just could not get the directions on that. So when my wife loves spending time, I get to sit with her and we watch Korean dramas. You can't talk. You got to read the captions. I don't speak Korean. I speak Japanese. It's different, very different. We don't talk. We just read the captions. So that's how she likes to spend time. The next icon is looks like a waiter holding a platter. That would represent service. People that like service are people that like their car washed. They like the carpet vacuumed. They like the trash taken out. They just like dinner on the table at a specific time. They like to be served. The next one is two hands together forming a heart. From that heart, there's a conversation fly out. So those would be the words from the heart. I just call it words to simplify it. Those would be the compliments, the I love yous, just that sort of thing. The last one is gifts, just a hand holding a gift. And you'll notice that this is a hand holding, each one of these has a hand holding something or other to represent what it is on each side of the die. That's really significant, Amber, because you have power, and I realize this going through this whole process, that I don't have power to bid anybody to love me, but I do have power to give it away and respond when it comes my way. Those are the only two things that I have control over.
Just real quick, after you're done listening to this amazing episode on this pretty freaking sweet podcast, give it a 5-star rating and then head on over to the Podcast Connection Network and check out all the other amazing podcasts that we got over there. This is a plug. I got one too. It's called The Nonchalant Perfectionist. Check us all out. The link, you know where the link's going to be in the episode's description.
And so that's why we're giving the love away, as this is what we're doing that particular day. Just two instructions, roll the dice every day. Whatever it lands on, that's the love language you practice giving away to everybody all day that day. While you're doing this, Amber, you're watching for people that light up. When they light up, you've discovered what their primary or secondary love language is. No longer do you have to say, excuse me, could we pause this relationship for a minute while I have you take this survey so I know how to love you? You don't have to do that anymore. We're done with awkward. Use your observation skills. That's going to be what really makes the day for you. It's going to make their day and it's going to make your day. You're going to get great satisfaction out of helping people have a better day all day long. The last side of the die has a hand holding a question mark. This one is surprise me. So on surprise me day, you're actually watching for opportunities to do random acts of kindness. And that's the game. Back to your question, Amber, about how does this influence individuals or children? So I'm testing it in a school. And so what they'll do is they'll roll it every day. Whatever it lands on, the teacher will take maybe 30, 45 seconds to say, class, this is the type of love language we're practicing today. It looks like this. And they can take just a little less than a minute to explain what it looks like. At the end of the day, what I've done for the teachers is I give them a PDF of a journal page. That journal page says what they rolled, opportunities they saw to love in that way, what they did about those opportunities. So it becomes for that child a love journal. I'm testing it in primary school, you know, K-6. And that, so at the end of a school year, for that first grader, those astute parents that kept those pages and put them in chronological order now could bind them. Now you've got a journal for that first grader. I absolutely would have loved, Amber, to have a journal of my first grade year. I remember my teacher's name to this very day. Mrs. Rogers, she was elderly. She was probably very close to retirement. I think she did retire maybe a year or two after I had her as a first grade teacher. But she was just so very kind. It was a huge contrast to what I had at home. I absolutely loved her. I remember her name and remembered all the how I felt there in that classroom. But I would have loved to have a journal about that. The second thing for the child in that classroom that this does is that it makes the child now responsible for their own behavior. I was 35 years old where I stopped blaming my father for passing this annoyance stacking, passing it down to my generation. I was still mad about that. Why did you do that? I mean, give me some better tools to work with so I'd be a better citizen in the world. And that was something that I did not want. There are traditions of the fathers that we don't want, and that should be stopped. We can be the generation, we can be the difference maker and stop that bad tradition and start a new one. So this would be my new tradition. No longer is the teacher totally responsible for that young person or the principal. It takes a huge burden off the teacher. Can you imagine that if you didn't have to discipline a child in a full day, how much more teaching would go on in that particular day? There's a huge amount of teaching opportunities lost in a day because of disciplinary actions. This should tamp down a lot of the violence and a lot of the bullying that's going on in the school system. That's how children can participate in this too. It works for all ages. I even tested it with a family of 5 children. The youngest one was 4 years old. One day he was very excited. They each rolled it differently for themselves and what they were going to practice that day. One day the 4-year-old rolled the physical touch. And he knew it, the icon right away. He says, yes, physical touch, jumping up and down, pumping his fist, physical touch. Immediately starts beating up on his brothers. That's how they expressed love to him, obviously. But it became, Amber, a teaching moment for that mother. This son would be more appropriate physical touch. Do the high five, do the fist bump, or you can just do a hug. Or develop with your brother one of those fancy handshakes that has 10 or 15 steps. Do something like that. That would be appropriate physical touch.
There is so much in there that I absolutely loved. I'm over here jotting down notes. I'll work backwards, I think. What you just touched on, the opportunity for that mom to talk about boundaries. This is a healthy, loving touch versus, you know, not so healthy and loving. So all of this opportunity for emotional intelligence for our children that is still not taught I don't think anywhere. No. You know, when I started learning about emotional intelligence, I'm not going to lie, I got angry. And I said, you know, when I started doing emotionally focused therapy, I said, why am I 30 years old just now learning about this? This is not fair. Why are we not learning this in school? And what you're saying, I absolutely love, because it is giving children an opportunity to learn emotional intelligence, to learn self-awareness and accountability and boundaries in a way they don't even know that they're learning something that makes it fun. And I absolutely love that. The other thing that I love is that, like you said, it's a baby step. This is the simplicity of this system, of what you have offered, I think makes this the most powerful tool. Because in this day and age, and with anything, we need to like make it fun and we'll get done. Making it that simplistic that we can actually use every day. Some of these tools are really tough to implement every day, especially for children. But I homeschool. So this is something that he can keep and see and he can build on. And I absolutely love that. So those were some of the topics that just stood out to me that I was like, okay, I have to make sure I touch on those. But that simplicity. And I think one more thing is with the baby steps, like you were saying in the beginning, this is a muscle. We haven't learned this. And so before we get any further, for the people who don't know what the heck the five love languages are, could you just give like a little brief overview so that they understand what that is?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And just back to your one question about the PDF, for teachers, for homeschool mothers or homeschool fathers, I'm actually sending the PDF to them and then they can print as many as they'd like. I'm actually giving you know, authorization to do that. I think, Amber, this is so important, so absolutely important for the children to have a journal for themselves, number one, but to be able to take responsibility for their actions in a loving way. Let's teach them how to love. We're teaching them how to hate. That's what TV says. That's what the news says. We're teaching them how to hate. Why do we pursue that? We already know the results of that. We already know about the school violence. We already know about that. We got to do something different. If something's to change, you know, I've got a phrase on my desk that says nothing changes if nothing changes. And it's just something I keep right in front of me all the time. We've got to figure this out. So as far as the love languages, we talked about as I showed the dice, we talked about service. So service is just something that you can do for someone else, something that you see there's an opportunity to help someone on their way. In a business setting, it might be you get your work done first, and then you go around and find out who else can I help get their work done. And quit this bickering back and forth in the workplace. Quit the toxic environment about, well, I did my work, do your own job. And it's quit all that. You just stop it. Just help one another and focus on the mission of wherever you're working. That's what service is all about. It can be that way in the home too. Just help one another. That's all, what we're talking about. We're talking about the words now. As far as words go, you need to have words that uplift one another, words that complement each other. You know, derogatory terms don't help a person. If it doesn't help you, or if you need to say something that will help another person, stop saying those things that hurt other people. That's what the words is all about. Spending time, we talked a little bit about that. Sometimes it's just hanging out. Just put the brakes on a little bit for that particular day. Hang out with that person. Do whatever they'd like to do. Spending time with them. We're talking about their love language. It's always about them. Forget it. It's ever being about you. It's not about you anymore. It's about them. It's about making their day. That is going to bring great satisfaction for you. You're going to get it someday, but just, you got to send it out. It's like putting money into the bank. How can you ever be paid interest on money that you don't have in the bank? Nobody's going to ever do that. You've got to fill that bank full of loving acts and do it every day. I have a lot of work to do because the angry way I was raised, there's a lot of anger out there. I expect it'll come back, and it come back eventually or maybe all at once. But however it comes back, I have to be prepared to be able to react in a loving way. Gifts, to me, is the love language is kind of the umbrella love language. It could be a gift, could be a hug. A gift could be a note. A gift could be cooking dinner for someone. And a gift could be just taking the time to spend with someone. So it doesn't really have to be something that you buy. It's just giving of yourself in that way. Don't let gifts intimidate you. It intimidated my son when he first started rolling the die. And he says, I don't want to do that. And then they rolled it again. It was gifts again. He said, I'm not going to do that. Rolled it again. It was gifts again. Four times he rolled it. And finally he said, okay, I'll do it. And don't let it intimidate you. It's not something you have to buy. And especially for those people that have a hard time or having a hard time with their finances, that might be really intimidating. Just do it. Give of yourself. That's what you can do on those days. So that's a review of the five love languages.
I love that. Thank you. And kind of just as an overview, the love languages, correct me if I'm wrong, the concept was basically created to learn how each person loves and receives love. And so that we can get a better understanding of the people that are in our lives and how we can have a deeper connection and really help them feel seen and heard. And we each enjoy all of these love languages, but we have a primary love language that really just gives us the good feels. Mm-hmm. And so like you were, so is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely, Amber. And the whole theory is that, you know, you'll have one love language, one way you like to be loved above all the rest. And Dr. Chapman distilled it down into five different ways that people like to be loved in his studies that he did. So some people will like more, they'll like gifts more than they'll like anything else, or they'll like the touch more than anything else. And it may change over time. So, you know, what I found, Amber, is that the survey actually put people in a box. And I thought, you know what? I don't think that's the greatest thing to do, that to tell you, Amber, that I know you like tacos, Amber. So because you like tacos, because you like tacos, I'm going to feed you tacos every meal, every day of the rest of your life, because I know that's what you love. You know what? Variety is the spice of life. And that's one thing about the dice that really is going to be very helpful for you. You're going to have variety in the love that you send out every single day. People like variety, and they like maybe gifts a couple times, but gift giving will be appropriate on your birthday or on Christmas. Hopefully you'll be getting gifts on those particular days, but it just, you're going to have that variety when you recognize or light somebody up. Just take a mental note for that person. That's their primary love language. And then you can wash, rinse, repeat for that person, or just do whatever you're doing on that particular day. I mean, there's some flexibility here that Dr. Chapman, I don't think, had in his book. You know, just if you tell me, Amber, what your love language is, and I'm sending it out, you get to that point that it becomes duty or expectation. And that is not love. That doesn't work for people to make it that duty or expectation. Exactly. Plus you get to the whiny voice that says, well, I told you how to love me. Why aren't you doing it? We don't want to get to that point.
Right. I took a note. That's exactly what I wanted to get to next. So I'm so glad that you read my mind. It went right into that. Is that I have found, which I was a little nervous about when I read the information, and I was like, okay, let's see what this is about. Because people put in this box, right? And I have seen people use this concept as a manipulation type, mm-hmm. almost, yeah. Is, well, I'm giving you gifts. Now you have to give me what I want, or like you said, but I told you that I love gifts, and how come you're not giving me gifts, right? And so I love how you've taken this concept and kind of just opened it up. Is let's expand how we love, because we all need to be loved in all of these ways. And so instead of, like you said, confining to a box, because it doesn't work, it doesn't seem to work. And so I love that you have created a system that does that so simplistically.
It is very simple, Amber, and I appreciate you recognizing that. And I hope that your listeners will recognize that as well as they practice it. As simple as it is, though, it takes 2 seconds. I mean, it's really a short-term investment. For the returns that you'll have for that particular investment, it's going to just blow your mind. It really will be something that will be so helpful for making your day a whole lot better day, making other people's day a lot better day. I love that you brought up about the transactional portion of that. To me, love can be transactional, but it's really better if it's not. You don't want it to be an exchange like that. If it's an exchange, it's a business transaction. I give you this, I want that in return. It doesn't work like that. And that reciprocity is not what you're looking for. That is really not the definition of love. To me, the definition of love is sending love out without any expectation of it ever coming back, but trusting the laws of the universe, the law of the harvest, the law of karma, the law of attraction. All those laws basically say the same thing, that whatever you send out someday is going to come back to you. Just don't expect it at the moment. Don't expect it anytime. If you get into the habit of sending it out without any expectation, then it'll come to you unabated. That's the position that you want. You want it to come to you, surprise you. Just for an example, I've had the dice actually copyrighted in 2017. I've been doing it for a little while, still rolling it every single day. One day I rode my electric bike to Chick-fil-A. Was just going to go have a little breakfast sandwich. And I get to Chick-fil-A and I tap my pockets. I said, oh, darn it, I forgot my wallet. And I said it out loud. And I was thinking, I was saying it to myself. There was just one person in front of me in line, and then another person off to the side waiting for their food. So I walked back out. I'm just all by myself, walking back out, didn't expect anything, and get on my bike, have my helmet on already. And that guy that was waiting for his food came out and said, I'll buy your breakfast. I didn't know him from Adam. Didn't know who he was or why he would be offering that. I said, really? Yeah, he said, here's $20. Just bring me the change. Well, it was my breakfast was only $4. So I gave him the $16 change and thanked him for that. And just, I gave him a card, said, please contact me. I have a gift for you for that. And I was trying to make it an exchange and it wasn't work. That was not the right thing to do. I just should accept that graciousness of that individual. And I remember the moment, it was a $4 item. It was a $4 thing. I mean, it was just something so small, but so very kind that person would do that for me. I was 2.5 miles away, but not very far away. I could have rode my bike back and come back, but he was right there for me. And it was just a very kind thing that I did not expect. That's what you can expect when you're sending love out and without any expectation of ever coming back. It will come back like that, but you need to be in a mindset that you can accept those kind of gifts that come in that way.
You touched on a few things. I feel like we could talk about this all day, but so you said, I love this because I feel like it ties into that building trust that you talked about, is when you put in and you give, these kind of moments like this help build that trust that keep that going. They're like, okay, this is real. This is working. And I think in the beginning, people get scared. Well, I'm just going to give, and I'm never going to get back. And I think too, tell me your thoughts on this, is that when you give and you see people light up in a different way, that can be that little teeny spark, like that little teeny dopamine hit that says, this does work. which kind of starts to build that trust. Okay, this does work. And if I just keep at it, it is going to come back to me. Does that resonate?
Absolutely. And I think that, Amber, you hit on something. It may be very difficult to step out of what normally Dr. Chapman was talking about in his book, that we give away what we like to come back. We have that exchange mentality. We have that reciprocity mindset that if I give a hug away, maybe I'll get a hug back. If I give a present away, maybe I'll get a present back. We got to get out of that mindset. And it really, to step out of that box is really scary. And there's a learning curve. I'm not going to deny that, but you can do it in a 30-day period. Rolling the die for a 30-day period, you will have gone through all five love languages now that you know them backwards and forwards. And one of the best part about that is that it raises your literacy level. It closes that communication gap that most people have. They only can see what they like. This gives that person peripheral vision. Now they're loving on me. I can see they're loving on me. It's not my primary love language, but I can respond to that now. We just need to raise that literacy level of love for everybody across the board. We're just illiterate as it comes, you know, because of all the negative that's gone out there. We've forgotten.
Wow, I love that point that people can be loving on us, but if it's not our primary love language, we're missing it. Yeah, we can't see it. That's so huge. I love that. So I love, again, how you just opened this box, like you said, that literacy of saying that paradigm shift of being able to see, opening that lens and having that peripheral vision, like you were saying. I absolutely love that. I also love how you were very honest and said, this might be a little uncomfortable. It's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. You know, you've had years and a lifetime of seeing one way. Mm-hmm. So we're not saying that this is just super easy and it's, you know, not going to be any work and it just, you know, you roll the dice and everything's good. The dice is a tool and you still have to do the work, but the payoff is more than you could even imagine.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. It once you pass that learning curve, even a 30 days, as small as that sounds, it really, once you're past the 30 days learning curve, you'll be able to recognize people loving on you that you'd never recognized before. And you're going to be able to respond to that like you've never had before. It really makes you a more valuable person. You're going to start attracting people to you because now you see them. They want to be seen just like you want to be seen.
Right.
You're seeing them in the way that they send love out. You're seeing that. And now there's a connection. There's a better connection, a more robust connection. It's like we're going to 5G now in love. That's what's happening with that. We're improving our own vision in that way. Our eyes are opened.
I love that. So, Paul, what is one key insight that you just really hope the listeners take away from what we've talked about and your system and everything that we've really talked about here today?
Great question, Amber. Thank you for that. I think that it's probably best said in The Sound of Music. And I know that's a classic, something that has a movie back to the movie critic. But there's a scene in there where Rolf, the little delivery guy, that he's in love with Liesl. And Liesl's up on the second story of the Von Trapp home, and he's singing to her. And part of the lyrics of the song that he's singing says, "Love in the heart wasn't put there to stay. Love isn't love till it's given away."
I love that. I love that. And that so contrasts to this society that we live in. Mm-hmm. And so I absolutely love the way that you are bringing this to the world. And I am honored to have you here and to be able to help do that. All this information will be in the description of this episode, but can you tell the listeners where they can find this Role of Love Cube and learn more about you?
Thank you, Amber. For my shameless plug, I'll just tell you, you can just go to my website. It's roleoflove.com, R-O-L-E of love. Remember, there's just a little play on words. You're actually R-O-L-L, the dice. It's out again outside of you. A lot of times we can't change circumstances outside of you, but R-O-L-E is what you can change within. Role of love, R-O-L-E of love.com. You'll find the book, the journal, the dice, all there. Also another book that I wrote about 101 ways to express love daily that Amber ordered as well. You'll be, yes. Those are suggestions of what you could do. I'm sure that you'll come up with many more suggestions, but it really will kind of get you a quick start, ignite that spark so that you can start the fire of love from in your own life by sending it out, lighting somebody's candle. When you light another person's candle, it doesn't diminish the flame on your own candle. That's what we need to do every day.
I love that. And I love that last bit is, I think people do forget that if we light somebody else's candle, we feel often like it's going to put out our own. And that's just quite the opposite. Yeah. So thank you, Paul. It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And I look forward to receiving my Role of Love cube.
Yeah. And the book. Yeah.
Yes. And the book. I am really excited. It's going to be something that I implement with my son for our homeschool. So we appreciate you.
I'll go ahead and send that PDF of the journal too.
That would be amazing. Thank you. Yeah, definitely.
I'm looking for a lot of other homeschoolers that we can implement this with as well. So if any of your listeners are homeschoolers, I'll make that offer to them. They can have that PDF for free if they'd like to do that.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amber. It's been a pleasure to be with you today.
The views and opinions expressed by myself and any guest on this podcast are solely ours and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of any organizations we are affiliated with. The content provided is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as medical advice. As always, consult with a trusted healthcare professional regarding any medical conditions or concerns.